The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
Yo, what is going on, people? Welcome to Throw Down Your Questions, episode 494. I'm your host, Tony Polanco, and tonight I'm joined by Emilio Lopez.
Yo, man, this dude puts the live 2 seconds before we're going to start.
That's it, crazy. Man. That's how we do it around here. Carlos Romero.
Yo.
And Brett Murdoch.
The motherfuckers running fire drills around here.
That's it. That's how we do it, right? Yeah. We're doing it live. You know? You know?
Tony's got places to go and people to see. That's what it is.
Yeah, that's how it is, man. Actually, no, because I saw like the music was about then. It's like, oh, let's just do it now perfectly. You know? We're back with another one. Rich may or may not join us. We don't know what's going on with him. Chris is still stuck in Detroit, people. You know?
He got caught in it. You know what it is, folks.
Yeah, the was a crowd strike, right? That whole nonsense. Blue screen. What happened?
I don't think the people even know what's going on with Chris.
No, they don't know at all, actually. So quick update. So Chris was, you know, he went to Virginia for like a job thing, flying back, and they had a connecting flight to Detroit, and he landed there right before the whole crowd strike nonsense happened, and he's been stuck there ever since Friday. It's Sunday. And he's been stuck there since Friday. Blue screen of death all over the place at the Delta terminal. And apparently they found him a flight last night. That shit got canceled. My man was getting ready to just rent a car so he could drive back to Texas. Now he found another flight.
Couldn't do that. Fleet,
you know?
Nope. I'm sure I think he said he couldn't do that because of the same reasoning.
Yeah, it's crazy, you know? So shout out to all my brothers out there in IT. I know you guys went through it, you know, on fucking Friday and probably during the weekend too, you know? It's nuts, man. And even little things are happening to just like regular folks. Like, you know, me and Manny's girlfriend had our packages fucking canceled for no reason from Amazon, you know?
They're obviously having issues there too.
It was like the user, me, refused the package. I'm like, I didn't know the shit came in. What the fuck you talking about? You know? But then when you go to Amazon, you know, their order page, it actually did say, like, this is related to a server issue. I'm like, oh, here we go. You know?
I was affected at work as well. But it was something that some folks got called up at like 1-2 in the morning whenever this first happened. But at least for us, it was resolved throughout the night.
Okay, that's good.
But these, you know, some of these places, like you talked about with the airports, they're still affected right now. That shit is crazy. Yeah, it's like, man. They pushed an update that broke something. Apparently, they rolled it back, but some folks cannot take that in for some reason. It's freaking weird, man.
Yeah, Barry, I said the same thing. Y2K2, the revenge. Like, this is the shit people thought was going to happen during Y2K, you know?
Yeah, I feel like this definitely was way more of a thing than Y2K was.
Well, Y2K never kind of ended up happening. Like, people kind of, they figured it out before anything happened,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, there were some things that were affected, but it wasn't nearly the level of what they thought it might be.
Well, that's because, they took measures for it. But this shit just came out of nowhere, you know? So
you want to know how to mess up the world? Just go after the one application that everyone seems to be using.
Yeah,
I did. What is the saturation point of this program? Like, how many businesses use this thing?
Carlos, you could probably answer that. CyberStrike, it's not CyberStrike. Is it called, what the fuck's the name of this shit?
CloudStrike.
CloudStrike, yeah. It's a cybersecurity thing.
It's cybersecurity used within Windows. And a lot of people use Windows. So It affected millions and millions and millions of people.
But how come it didn't? I mean, obviously it's a part of Windows, but why doesn't it affect something like a personal computer?
Because personal computers don't take the same security measures as you know, corporate machines. You know, people that use it for the corporate world and different companies that take measures. Like, for example, my work computer is a Windows laptop. I can't even plug in a USB stick because if I do, it gets rejected.
Yeah,
because it has a security measure in it. There's a whole bunch of stuff that, you know, a lot of work computers have, you know, running in the background that allow you to either do or not do certain stuff.
Yeah, pretty much. That's how my work computer is too. I don't use that computer though, thankfully, because I got to review other shit.
It's probably slow as hell.
Oh, sure. The thing is like fucking like, I think it's got to be like 5-6 years old. Ancient, slow as fuck. But thankfully, I have to review laptops and computers, and I need to log into those to actually be able to use them. So thankfully, I'm not restricted. So my work computer, I just have it in a desk. I don't even use that shit. It sucks, you know? it's a piece of crap. But I was going to make a point, but... yeah, crazy. Oh, that's what it was. Because, you know, this is the internet, people. You know, I saw Apple and Linux users laughing their asses off, you know. This ain't happening on my computer. You know, it's hilarious, man. All right. Anyway, let's get into it. So within the realm of video games, because, again, this was another weekend where some historic shit happened. I'm like, can we get a break, please? You know, I thought Sunday was going to be a chill day. Nope. But, you know, within the realm of video games, something big did happen. EVO, people. EVO happened this weekend. So naturally, we have a lot of EVO questions. Although, we didn't get the usual amount of questions. So if you want to ask us any more video game stuff, make sure you let us know now or forever hold your peace in the comments. All right, let's get into it, man. Mob Hits starts us off. And we may need to Google some of this shit in some cases. Since we're celebrating EVO weekend, rate your top three Street Fighter or any fighting game box art. Well, I'm not going to do the rating shit, but we can just discuss our favorite box art for fighting games. Yeah, Capcom is always legit. Japanese Capcom. Some of those American ones kind of funky.
Yeah, those some of those American ones are awful.
Yeah. I really like... X-Men versus Street Fighter, you know, that's a really good one. And X-Men Children of the Atom, that original one that was like kind of painted looking and stuff, that was really good. I think Street Fighter Alpha 2 with Ryu looking up at Akuma and him looking down and shit, you know, and you see like a silhouette of like Sakura, that was really good. What else? Manny, what are some of your favorite Street Fighter or any fighting game box art?
Oh, let's see. I definitely have to say it's hard, you know, it's interesting because it's also difficult to tell which ones were one, because I know, because like Street Fighter Alpha, the real one, the one in Japan, that one has a different cover than the one in the States, which is just Ryu, the back of Ryu kicking into
a can cover, or something like that. Yeah, terrible.
But I would say, like, as far as like fighting game covers, I always did like that one Alpha. Again, it could be just, you know, like it was like shaped like a two.
Yeah.
Alpha 2 one where it has all the characters.
That was a good one. Yeah, but that's a good one. Yeah, yeah.
There was like Ryu's in the center and then all the other characters are on there. The game sucked because it was just a rush piece of garbage, but the Fighting Jam cover is actually kind of cool.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah. That was a good one. Yeah, Street Fighter Alpha. Yeah, that was a good one. Street Fighter Alpha 2 cover here. But again, the Japanese ones are the better ones because some of these American ones are terrible.
Well, yeah, like a lot of times what they'll do is they'll make these lousy, like, you know, definitely whenever they came to the States, they would make these sort of lousy covers. Like they just put these things on there. I'm like, guys, you don't need to fuck with it. Just put the cover that was on it, you know?
Yeah.
Because example, Street Fighter 2, weren't most of the Street Fighter 2 covers the exact same type of image? Like the championship edition?
They were all different.
They were different. Like if you remember Street Fighter 2 for Super NES, it has this weird sort of like hyper-realistic
Oh, with Blanca coming at
Coming at Chun-Li and Ryu laying on the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's that one. But then I think was a championship edition or Turbo. It's like the same thing, but just different characters.
Because I'm looking at it now. For Turbo, there's also for SNES, it's E Honda doing 100 hand slap on Sagat.
Yeah.
You know? But it looks like it's the same artist, though. That kind of more realistic.
Yeah, it's the same artist. I don't hate those. I don't think I think it's done well done, but I would much rather have the other one. The Street Fighter 2 fight, the Street Fighter 2 collection for PlayStation, that had an awesome.
That was a good one.
Yeah, whereas like Kamiya, has the new characters on the bottom, and then it has Ryu and Chun-Li on the back.
Yeah. and I also liked, and this is now a shout out to an American cover. I think it was Marvel Superheroes. Joe Madureira did that one. That was really good.
He did the console one.
Yeah.
The arcade one was Arthur Adams. Ooh. So he did the marquee on the top.
Yeah.
And with all the Marvel superheroes on it. And then he did the thing on the side with Thanos like holding his hand up and the Infinity Gauntlet is there.
Yeah, yeah. That was a good one. Yeah. A lot of good stuff, man. I know SNK has some good ones, but I didn't really play a lot of SNK fighting games, so can't really comment too much. I don't really particularly remember Mortal Kombat having any memorable ones. It's just the fucking dragon.
It was just two. The dragon was cool. The
dragon's cool.
And then Mortal Kombat 2 was like the dragon and a two. They never really had anybody on the cover.
No, not really. What about you, Carlos? What were some of your favorites?
Well, the only ones that I can remember are the Street Fighter 2 ones, because Street Fighter 2 is probably my favorite game. The later ones, 4, 5, and 6. Have been pretty kind of lame.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of like generico cover arts for these days.
Yeah.
I would just stick to the old SNES ones. I don't even remember what the original Street Fighter looked like.
I'm looking at it now. The original Street Fighter, pretty bad art. Fighting Street? Okay.
Fighting Street.
Yeah. That one looks kind of cool. Reuse in front of Mount Rushmore for some reason.
there's that one Street Fighter for the NES. So that was Fighting Street for TurboGrafx has a nice
That's cool the one I'm cover. Looking at. Yeah, these in front of Mount Rushmore. For NES. Is he fighting Birdie? Who is that? Some guy with nunchucks on the cover. That's not Birdie. I don't know who that is.
I don't think
Street Fighter, the first one for NES.
Oh, yeah, the first one for NES, it's Birdie, but Birdie's a white guy in that one.
Yeah. Were you saying, Carlos?
Blitz, shout out to Blitz. He says any fighting game cover that has a Japanese version is better.
I mean,
I think that's just any Japanese game.
Yeah, generally speaking, it's a good rule of thumb to have.
Most of the Japanese games have had, Japanese games have the better looking covers. It's kind of switched now, where they sort of equalize them and make them all the same ones.
Blitz says he liked the cover of Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo for 3DO. Remember, it was like kind of sketchy.
It was just the cute. It's just just the Kuma.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
It was
actually the Japanese art that was on the cover.
Yeah. He said X. He's thank you for pointing out. He said X. So that one's like tiles, Manny, and some of the tiles had like sketches of the characters. So even that looks better than the American one too. Manny, check it out. Super Street Fighter 2 X 3DO Japan.
Japan!
Though the one that had the Super Street Fighter for 3DO had Ukuma on the cover, which was cool.
Yeah.
But it had that shitty, rock background.
Yeah, I don't know why they had that. Yeah, that was stupid.
it was like that shitty Photoshop filter rock background that they put it behind everything. Yeah.
Man, the Street Fighter Alpha cover for America looks fucking terrible.
Oh, yeah, it's that. Awful.
Yeah, I remember
it's
that
like,
shit.
Yeah, it's like Ryu fighting. Yeah. I forgot who he's fighting.
So Ken's coming at him with a flying kick. Rose is hanging on the background. Yeah. So are Charlie and Chun-Li. They're just like, oh, my God. Like, what?
And then there's that weird... Is that weird in Bison Cloud that's floating over everything?
And they're in Rose's
level. But then you look at the Street Fighter, the original Street Fighter Alpha cover, which is Ryu and Ken.
Looks fucking legit,
Just put that shit on the cover. Come on, guys.
Yeah.
I mean, really. I feel like the guys, they just, you know, they just change shit to just to change shit.
Yeah.
It's like you look at the original Mega Man cover, you're like, man, this is great. Then you see the dumbass American cover, which is like,
yeah,
even the one that was in, you know, like Europe, like Mega Man Europe, like for Mega Man 2, it's awesome. It's actually a really nice cover.
Yeah.
It's like, so then who are these weirdos that they got to make these covers?
Yeah, the Mega Man 2 box art for America was pretty bad, but the one for one was horrendous. Like, oh, who is this awful dude? You know?
Yeah, it's some random guy. Like, it's such a big joke that they put that version of Mega Man Street Fighter versus Tekken? They
yeah,
put
I think that so, goofy yeah.
Mega Man in there, yeah.
Fucking insane, man. No, I don't think it was Street Fighter versus Tekken. I don't think that exists.
It was, it was Street Fighter versus Tekken that came out. There was Tekken versus Street Fighter that didn't come out.
I thought, am I confusing about SNK?
No, it's Tekken.
Oh, is it because of the 3D Street Fighter, right?
Yeah, it was a 3D Street Fighter game.
Yeah.
And that was the one it had what's her face in it? The first appearance of a playable Poison.
Oh, here it is. Street Fighter X Tekken. How the hell did I forget about this?
Yeah. That's the one that has that goofy Mega Man in it.
Yeah. That silly Mega Man. That's crazy.
I thought the Marvel versus Capcom with the side heads was kind of fun.
Yeah, I like that one.
With all we're the just characters looking at each on other.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like that one stayed intact though.
Yeah.
Also, Marvel Super Heroes versus Street Fighter had an intact cover too.
Wow, yo, Carlos, I'm looking at the box art for Street Fighter V in Japan. Looks better.
It's a lot better. Yeah,
yeah, it's better.
Yeah, this the one in America is just the Ryu one, right? He's just like standing.
Yeah, he's just like that. He's doing the Wakanda shit, you know. You know. But go ahead. Go ahead.
So, like, there's also the Totonoku versus Capcom is looking at each other.
The Street Fighter 6 one is kind of boring. It's just that Axel dude or whatever the fuck his name is. It's like, yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty generic, yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Brett, you want to weigh in? I know you're not a big fighting game guy, but, you know, you like art, and you're an artist. He might be off right now. Oh, there he is.
No, I'm just sitting here. I was like, honestly, not a lot of these stood out to me, except for, like, I want to say it was Street Fighter 2 or 3, whichever one had, like, it was one of the Turbo Edition ones, and X-Men versus Street Fighter.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't really remember a ton of the box art for a lot of stuff, to be fair.
But. Yeah. Yeah, because you weren't really obsessed with that shit like Manny and I were back in the day.
We lived that stuff, man.
Yeah. You know, we told this story before, but we'll say it again. Manny and I used to, because back in the day, kids used to sell the moves for Mortal Kombat to each other in school. Mm-hmm. But Manny and ours was better because we used to draw the characters, you know?
Yeah.
So we sold
So it began off where it was like we drew all the characters, and then because Tony had the clearer handwriting, he'd write down all the moves. But then I was like, okay. My mom's got a typewriter, so I'm going to type out all the moves so we have them all really clearly typed out. And then we had, like, drawings that we put in there. So we, you know, copied a lot of the drawings that were made for the, I think it was John Tobias who drew all that stuff.
Yeah, that was,
We drew all that stuff nice, drew them all nice and cool and big inside of it. And we made some decent money off of it.
We did,
it was like $1.
Yeah.
Like, ours was more expensive because it had more pages, but you got moves and art. And I don't know how many, I can't remember how many of our moves were accurate.
No, because we got them right off the video game magazine, so they were pretty accurate, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And we didn't get any complaints, so, you know?
No.
Blitz says King of Fighters 02 was good. SNK games had good box art. I remember those. Samurai Showdown, that was good. I love Samurai Showdown, man. Fantastic. My favorite one was playing it on 3DO. You know, we used to play that a lot back in the day too, you know?
Yeah, because that was the one version of it besides the Neo Geo one that actually had the zooming.
Yeah, the zooming, yeah. Because remember, on Super Nintendo, the characters had, it was the small sprites, and on Genesis, mm-hmm. it was the big sprites, but there was no scaling, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, that's important.
But yeah, the 3DO was the only one that wasn't, you know, an SAK console, you know, the Neo Geo that had it.
Yeah.
But the load times were atrocious.
Oh, yeah, they were bad.
On the 3DO.
How much?
If we're going to different franchises, yeah. I just want to give a shout out to Sub-Zero for the N64. And fuck that shit.
You know, trash.
Because it had the exact same box art as the other Mortal Kombat games, but it wasn't a Mortal Kombat game.
Yeah. I'm looking at this shit right now, too. Fuck. All right, that was fun. Moving on here. Again, first five questions here are all about fighting games.
Ronald won.
Yeah, fight, which makes me very happy. All right, next question here. If you guys could choose, what franchise would you have do a crossover with Capcom? Well, the other big one would be Mortal Kombat, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was going to ask a question, but I know how they would do it. It would just all be 3D. Because if this is back in the day, you would have to ask yourself, would they make the Mortal Kombat character sprite-based, or would they make the Street Fighter guys real, which they did with the Street Fighter game? But a modern one would just be all 3D, you know? But I think a Mortal
Kombat... Yeah, just be all 3D.
Yeah, but of course the question would be, would Capcom allow their characters to get killed?
Brutality, yeah. That's the biggest question.
You know, imagine that shit, Sub-Zero fucking ripping off fucking Ryu's head, dangling his spine everywhere. Like,
The answer to that would also be, because if you remember, DC did DC versus Mortal Kombat, and you notice the DC guys never, they never swapped out their, they never did, you never could do fatalities, and the blood wasn't in it either.
Okay, so I guess you could do it like that. It's like Mortal Kombat without the mortal, you know?
Just the combat.
But I would like to see that.
Or they just made fatalities that were just like, you know, they weren't like horrible. Like, you know, they burned a guy alive, but you know, you didn't see anything. You know, stuff like that.
He just went to dust.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just went to dust.
It'll be the Super stuff Nintendo like fatalities from Mortal Kombat 1. You remember those?
But what's amazing to me is that they allowed it to happen, you know, in the later games when they both became Warner Brothers.
Yeah. All the fatalities.
Yep. You can do a fatality on the Joker in the Mortal Kombat game.
Interesting. But yeah, I think that'll be the big one. Cause that's the one matchup we've always wanted to see since we were kids, Mortal Kombat versus Street Fighter, you know, that would be crazy. Even now people go fucking nuts if they ever made that, you know? And I think the other one, obviously SNK, that happened, you know, Tekken happened.
Tekken. Yeah.
What's another one? One that could cross with Capcom, Carlos?
Blaze Blue.
Yeah. I mean, why not? And do it in that art style, you know?
Yeah. That'll be, cause it'll make Street Fighter feel more Japanese again.
Oh shit. Oh, fuck me up. Capcom versus Arc System Works, bro. Call it that.
There you go.
Know? Because yeah, then that, you can have all their shit, you know?
Yeah, you can have all of them, yeah.
Ooh, I would go nuts. Yeah, but it has to be that Arc System Works art style. It has to be in that engine, you know?
Well, if you got to remember, if it says Capcom first, it's the Capcom.
It has to be Arc System Works versus Capcom. So, yeah, we got to do it like that. I would go nuts, you know? Bliss has Tekken. Oh, what a... Fuck me up. I read the first part. I thought you were going to say Tekken versus Capcom or Capcom versus Tekken.
No.
He named the big one, Manny. He named the big one.
Oh.
This is not Capcom. It's not Capcom. Tekken versus Virtua Fighter. Fuck.
There you go. Now you realize.
Midnight launches aren't even a thing. I'd be there on midnight for this shit.
Now you realize Virtua Fighter and Tekken have the same staff or had the same staff. The creator of Tekken came from Virtua Fighter.
Yeah.
Same thing with the guy who did Dead or Alive.
Yeah.
They're both former Virtua Fighter people.
And also related, kind of, the guy who created Fatal Fury worked on Street Fighter. So you notice how they're not offshoots, but you know, they always come from like the bigger franchise.
The creator of Fatal Fury didn't work on Street Fighter. He created the original
Street Fighter. The original, yeah. So, yeah, Tekken versus Virtua Fighter, would be fucking nuts. And here's the thing, fucking Harada, man, he's been he has been teasing Virtua Fighter for like 2 years now, you know? So it's like, when is this going to happen, bro? You know, because
yo, man, wait, Harada is just
yeah. Again, the Tekken guy is talking about fucking Virtua Fighter, you know? So yeah, that would be crazy. Tekken versus Virtua Fighter, I'd be done. I'm done. You know, that'd be good. And it probably nowadays in modern times, it probably would be Tekken versus Virtua Fighter since Tekken's more popular. Since we haven't had a new Virtua Fighter for fucking ever, you know. Because it, you know, if this was back in the day, it would be Virtua Fighter versus Tekken, you know. That'd be dope. All right, next up here, some sponsored questions from Mr. Ramudeth. More Mob Hits questions here. More fighting game questions. He goes, it seems like every fighting game has a ninja character. Who is your favorite ninja character in any fighting game? Mine would be Ryu Hayabusa.
Of course you pick Ryu Hayabusa. He's the guy who got his own game.
Yeah.
Ninja fighting. Well, I would put fucking Strider.
I knew it. That's why I didn't say that, because I knew that was going to be your answer, you know?
Yeah, Strider.
Ninja. Hey,
you know who?
No. Haomaru is a ninja, isn't he?
Haomaru?
Isn't he like? Calling him wrong? Like the guy with the dog in Samurai Showdown?
No, that's not Haomaru. Haomaru is the guy with the samurai.
I'm saying
you're talking about Hanzo. You're talking about Hanzo.
Yeah, he's a ninja, isn't he?
He's a ninja.
Okay, because I was gonna go
Hanzo. Yeah. There's Hanzo, and then there's the other guy who's blanking the blue blonde haired ninja guy.
Yeah, I'm picking the guy with the dog. He's fun. Okay. I don't know why I'm forgetting his fucking name.
Wait, why are you picking that dude when you have Cage, yo?
No, because that's too obvious. That's why. Because I was gonna go with Kage, obviously Virtua Fighter, you know. But I'm gonna go with the culture appropriation guy, you know. the white ninja, guy. You know, but he has the dog, you know, he has a dog.
Hey, Poppy.
Yeah. Hey, Poppy. You know, but yeah, Kage was the first guy I thought, but it's like, let me go somewhere else with this. What about you, Carlos? Favorite ninja in a fighting game? Yeah. Godfall. Thank you. Yeah.
Maybe Ibuki.
Yeah.
Which one?
Ibuki.
Street Fighter.
Ooh, yeah. That's a good one.
Ibuki's cool. What's it called?
The kunai and shit.
Yeah, the kunais. Yeah, I think I'll go with that. Because, I mean, most of the popular ones, I mean, Ryu Hayabusa is probably the most popular one that I can think of. Yeah. I think everyone likes.
Oh, yeah, Ryu Hayabusa, obviously. See, yeah, Blitz, you know, I'm not going to say, I even now I never call him Galford. It's always Galfordo, you know? Oh, man, some motherfucking Samurai Showdown, man. You know? Good stuff. What about you guys in the chat? Scorpion. I mean, yeah, you know, he is a ninja, right? Scorpion, Sub-Zero, Sonya, Mortal Kombat. Yo, somebody on Twitter the other day, they posted the intro to Mortal Kombat. They're like, it's like, when you see this logo, what do you see? You know, New Line Cinema. I already heard that shit in my head. I already heard it in my head, man. That shit gets you hyped, you know? I rewatched that movie like a few months ago. It's still fucking good.
It's a good film. Like they adapted it pretty well, right?
Yeah.
You know, it had pretty much had the plot of Mortal Kombat 1 going into one Mortal Kombat 2.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Yeah, that was a fun movie, man.
With the exception, well, except for Shao Kahn at the end.
Yeah. Yeah, he shows up. Yeah.
He sounds like Dr. Claw.
Yeah. Kano, Liu Kang, Raiden, Scorpion, Sub-Zero.
Scorpion. Johnny
Sonya. Johnny Cage.
Johnny Cage.
Sonya. Remember that commercial? Mortal Monday?
Yeah, the kid. Mortal Monday, and the kids were like running around Chicago. Like,
yeah,
Mortal Kombat.
That was awesome, man.
Change the world. That
it really did. Yeah, Mortal Monday, man. Mortal Monday. Remember, because I was still back in the day when games didn't have release dates. It was you come out when you come out. That and Sonic Tuesday were like the first games that had an actual release date. Like, this is the day this game's coming. Get hyped, you know? And then after that, every game started having release dates to get the hype up. You know, before it was just like, the game shows up when it shows up, you know? See, motherfuckers don't know about that shit. You know, there were no pre-orders back then, you know, you should just get the game, you know. All right. So that was a fun one. Another one, Mr. Mob Hits. We've kind of been asked this before, but, you know, I'll allow it again. If you could fit three of your favorite arcade cabinets in your home apartment, which ones would they be? Would these be full ones or the little ones that Adam has arcade one up?
I got to get my 1K. Marvel vs. Capcom 2 has got to be one of them for me. I think that's a must.
I got a cheating ass answer.
Oh, are you gonna get one of the ones that have like multiple?
All of them. Give me one that has all the Capcom fighting games. I'm good. You know, that's my answer. Like, just one with all the fucking games on it, man. I'll be good.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, if I have to choose specific games, I'll probably do Marvel vs. Capcom 2. I'll probably do Metal Slug.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Here's my third one. I didn't know this was a what do you call it? A fucking arcade game until I went to Japan.
Japan. And
maybe this was just common knowledge to you guys, but for me, I had no freaking clue. Super Mario Bros. Is in the arcade.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Like the only time I ever saw it was it the Wizard or the Wiz?
Yeah, the Wiz. Yeah. Remember that fucking movie, man? The Wiz. You know, or the Wizard, because the Wiz was the Michael Jackson movie, wasn't it, Manny?
Oh, that's Michael Jackson. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
the Michael Wizard Jackson slash Richard Pryor, Diana Ross film. Yeah, no, Richard Pryor is not in the Wiz.
No, he's in Superman 3.
That's Nipsey. You're getting Richard. Oh no, Richard Pryor
is the Wiz.
He's the Wiz. He is the Wiz.
I'm the Boney.
Oh my,
the thing they say about me is true.
Yep. Nipsey Russell's in it too. Yeah. That film was directed by everybody's favorite Batman Forever. Batman Forever director.
Oh, really? Schumacher?
Yeah, Joel Schumacher directed The Wiz. That's
Nobody
what he was known
the
for.
Wiz.
Mm-hmm.
People don't know that thing, you know.
Super Mario Bros. is my third one.
Yeah. But if I'm not going to cheat, obviously got to have X-Men versus Street Fighter, Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo, and Mortal Kombat 2. I think, you know what? Virtua Fighter 2. Let's go with that, you know?
So for what?
For arcade cabinet. If you had room for it, which arcade cabinets would you like?
Oh, okay.
And it doesn't have to be fighting games. They just said arcade cabinets, but I went with fighting games.
Oh, man. Jeez. The crazy taxi one?
Oh, I'm sorry. I got to change.
Virtual Lawn.
No. Motherfucking Turtles in Time, man.
Oh, that's a good one.
The full shit. One. Yeah.
Oh, that's
for me.
I wish I could steal that one.
For me, it would be the double screened X-Men.
That's a good one.
Game by Konami.
Yeah.
Which for some reason is delisted. God damn it. So I'd like to have that. The other one would be the Crazy Taxi.
Got that at Barcade, son.
Yeah, you could sit inside of it and everything. Yeah. Let's see.
You want Afterburner? You get on that shit?
Nah, I never cared for Afterburner. Yeah, the one like what John Connor was.
Yeah,
in,
yeah, from Terminator 2. Yeah,
in Terminator 2. Yeah,
But yeah, three, man. Yeah, three.
Oh, and the third one, let's see. I would go with just having the actual Marvel vs. Capcom cabinet.
There you go.
The one that we had. I think that was just cool. Not the miniature arcade.
No, we're talking about
the
big ones, yeah. So which Marvel vs. Capcom do you want? The first game? The first Marvel vs. Capcom?
It's Marvel Super Heroes. Sorry.
Okay, there you go. Marvel Super Heroes.
Marvel Super Heroes. That's that one.
The one with the Infinity gems, right?
Yeah, the ones with Infinity Gems and all that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. It's a good one.
All right. Infinity! Maximum Spider.
Maximum Spider. All right, good stuff. All right, another one here. I like Bliss's name is now Super Tumeke 64. I like that. With all the fighting game hype right now, I thought I'd throw a question in. Every fighting game has had its lead character slash characters, be it Ryu and Ken, Kazuya and Heihachi. Heihachi's back, by the way, people. Haomaru.
He's always back. Did he climb out of the volcano?
He climbed out again, you know. Terry Bogard, etc. So who in your opinion, is the greatest fighting game lead character and why?
Wait, because Heihachi's not a main character.
Well, he says Kazuya and Heihachi. So it's like both?
More Kazuya. Not Heihachi's the final boss.
Yeah.
That's you know, is what it is. But anyway, so like best fighting game protagonist?
Yeah, character? Like lead character, like, you know, that, like, okay, when you think of a fighting game franchise, that's the dude, you know?
Well, you know, it's weird. Like, Virtua Fighter kind of doesn't have one.
It does and it doesn't. I know what you mean. Like, it would be Akira.
Akira?
But he is not friendly. He's not user friendly. He's the most, one of the most difficult characters to use, you know?
Yeah. If anything, like, out of easy players to play would be Jackie and Sarah.
Yeah, Jeet Kune Do, yeah. My answer is generic as fuck because it's so iconic. It's fucking Ryu, you know?
Like you!
Like, he is the embodiment of a fighting game character. Like, he has a cool striking design, simple to play, and, you know, even his story is just like, I just want to get better at fighting. I want to kick somebody's ass. I want to be the best fighter. I'm a fucking hobo going around the world fighting people. I don't know how I get plane tickets, but I'm getting there. You know, with them dirty ass feet.
He's so good that not only all that.
I know what you're going with this.
There's like five other or six other characters that are pretty much him.
Yep. Yeah, pretty much.
It's like, hey, do you want the fast Ryu from America or do you want the gimped Ryu with Dan?
Yeah. Or do you want the girl Ryu?
Or you want
a demon Ryu? You know?
Do you want the Ryu that kicks a little bit more with the blonde hair?
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy, man. So he's iconic as fuck, you know?
I would go with like he's not. I would say Ryu is the fighting game like protagonist character, you know, right? But I would go. I like Soul Bad Guy a lot as the main guy of Guilty Gear. Just because he has a really cool silhouette. He's got like, you know, he's got the long hair. He looks like a weird cyberpunk like badass guy. I thought he looked cool.
Yeah,
I have a question.
Why is it?
This might be a dumb question too. Is Liu Kang still the face of Mortal Kombat?
Not anymore.
Who is him? Who is the face of Mortal Kombat now?
I have no clue.
You know, there's a transition phase. So you would always see Raiden on the thing. Liu Kang. Liu Kang was the guy.
Yeah.
But yeah. Like after some point, it just became about the cast and never really. Yeah. Like I feel like Liu Kang barely gets anything in the games after three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he was the guy, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. He won the tournament.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He did. But the weird thing is he's the main guy, but I feel like there's like 10 other characters from the original storyline that are more popular than him.
Yeah. Like Sub-Zero and Scorpion, you know?
And Shang Tsung and Goro and Raiden. Oh, shit,
that's right. Yeah.
Johnny Cage.
Johnny Cage, man.
Well, yeah.
Yo, by the way, off topic, but still about fighting games. So somebody did a thread about like the making of the Street Fighter movie with Jean-Claude Van Damme. And to no one's surprise, he had an affair with Kylie Minogue during the movie, right? But he had a quote. My man goes, he's like, she was so beautiful. How could I not have an affair with her? Like, damn, bro. He just admitting it. He's like, oh, her lovemaking was so good. And like, my man, you know? Oh.
He was also very much high on cocaine,
too. Yeah, yeah.
That was what they was. That's part of the audio, one of the audio commentaries and documentaries that they have done for Street Fighter, the movie.
Yeah.
They said that movie was in so much turmoil. They didn't even have the budget to do, like, the special effects on the characters. Shit. That's why when Ryu and Ken do their little fireballs, you just see a screen flash.
It's just a flash, yeah. That's a good thread. Like, he talks about some of that stuff, like how like Capcom kind of kept interfering, like, gotta put this character in. And the only one that didn't make it, because originally they were just going to focus on 7 characters, even though there was original 8. Mm-hmm. They got like 15 in there, but they couldn't get Fei Long. And the director was like, yeah, this is not the vision I had. And then they were talking about, you know, fucking Raul Julia ad-libbing, like, you know, where he's like, I guess you didn't see that, you know, like that was just ad-libbed.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, the thing about it, like, you're going to tell Raul Julia to not do that.
Yeah.
He's like, he gets the character of like of that, at least that sort of megalomaniacal type of character that he's supposed to be playing.
Yeah,
he's the best thing in that movie.
Yeah, again, like the thing that's
legitimately
no, he is, he's fantastic in that movie. Like, and obviously the iconic line that is the, obviously everybody acknowledges the movie's not good, but everybody loves the Tuesday line. That's become a thing. It's like a cultural thing. Everybody knows when you say, for me it was Tuesday, everybody, even if they don't know where it's from, they know what that means. You know,
the day Bison graced your village. It was
yeah, that was great. Shaboy, Shaboy, what's going on, Riku? You know, hanging out in the chat. Yeah, it's like the day Bison graced the village with his presence. It was the most important day of your life. But for me, it was Tuesday. Fucking awesome, man. Great, you know. What are some other ones? Carlos, you're right about this. Like Chun-Li, you know, fucking iconic Street Fighter. Blanca too, you know.
I mean, those are like iconic characters, but not like the main characters.
No, they're not main characters. They're not.
Is there a Street Fighter character that maybe not surpasses Ryu, but gets close to getting his level?
Oh, Chun-Li.
Chun-Li,
you know, for obvious reasons.
Kind of like how Mai is the
you
know, unofficially the Fatal Fury, the other Fatal Fury protagonist, because you know.
Yeah, and I think Cammy would probably be third, you know, for another, again, obvious reasons.
Akuma is really popular, but he's not like mainstream popular, but I feel he's like the most popular within the hardcore. Like, fucking, always,
of course, you know. What do you think I got this tattoo for? You know?
There you go.
Yeah. By the way, my niece and nephew was over, and like, you know, I was lifting something up. I'm like, Tony, you got a tattoo? I'm like, I've had this tattoo longer than you have been in this earth. What are you talking about? You know, but Akuma's the shit. He's like my favorite character, like to play as. And he was always the guy I didn't play as most because he was my favorite. You know, I would bring him out if I'm losing. I'm like, all right, let's bring Akuma out. Let's fucking go.
Tony's character has always been Ryu, and Ryu with the medium to hard punches.
Yes,
and kicks.
That's it. I don't fuck around with combos, man. I just hit you with the hard shit. You know.
For me, it's always been the people that can do combos and like kind of little bits of like chip dance. Like,
yeah.
So like it would be Ken. It'd be a little bit of Guile. I like Fei Long, but I don't.
Fei Long.
I'm not very good. Is never very, very good with him.
Yeah, he's a little tricky. By the way, speaking about ninja, ninja characters, Guy counts, wouldn't he?
Guy is a ninja. Yes.
Yeah, because I really liked him in Street Fighter Alpha. You know.
Street Fighter Alpha. Yeah.
But yeah, speaking about iconic characters, Terry Bogard's pretty fucking iconic too, you know, with that hat and everything.
With his little cap on.
Yeah, it's fucking awesome, man. I got to rewatch those Fatal Fury movies, man. Those are great.
At last, I have the final move to the Hakyoku-Sinken school.
Yeah, fucking Geese Howard, you know.
A stupid manga video, like dubs. Yeah. If you guys have ever seen the Fatal Fury, like OVAs, for some reason, like Geese has this crazy deep voice, like, at last, I have to fight a move to spark the Hakyoku-Sinken school.
like, dude, calm it down, man. You know? Yeah, it was. Yeah, well, that was. Yeah, that was. Who did that one, Manny?
Manga video.
It was manga video. Oh, yeah.
Manga video was always for a catch 22. Viz?
Yeah.
Too. It might have been Viz. It might have been Viz that did that one. Sorry.
Some of those were rough, man. Like Streamline Pictures had the better ones. Sometimes they were off too. You know, like you know.
Yeah. Viz did Fatal Fury and the Fatal Fury LVAs in 2 movies.
Yeah.
And manga did Ninja Scroll.
Yeah, that was a good dump, though. That was them. You know? But that was like later on, so they got better. But some of those early ones were rough, man. And you could also kind of tell when they got better talent than others in some of these fucking dubs, you know?
I mean, as the technology got a little bit better, they were able to kind of squeeze things
in. Yeah, because it was like, they had to talk fast to match the lips and stuff. Oh, man. All right.
A buddy of mine was watching Vampire Hunter D again.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know that part, the part where he goes, allow me to introduce myself, I have got Magnus Lee.
It's not in there. That was me. Manny. I told you that. I was like, here's the thing. That
was a buddy of mine was selling me. Selling me the same thing.
Yeah, I was like, oh, it's not. The new dub is good, but I still like that old one. You know, like objectively, the new dub is better. You know, but I like that old one, man. You know. You can live as a vampire, you know. You can live as a human and as a vampire.
You can live as a human and not as a vampire.
Like that line's still there, but it's not like, you know.
No, yeah, they're not. Yeah, they're a little slower. It seems like it has more time, right?
Yeah. You know, it's funny when
they're trying to get it all in.
When I rewatched Vampire and G, I was like, hey, you know, this movie's not really that great. There's a lot. You can see some of the cheapness, like they're reusing a lot of like animations and stuff, and. Like, I still liked it, don't get me wrong, but it was like, oh, well, you could tell this wasn't exactly high budget, you know?
I mean, it was a decent enough budget for what it was. Yeah. And both those films were released in theaters, as I remember, I think.
I think so, yeah. But then you have movies like fucking Venus Wars. Objectively, not that great, but you could tell they threw money at that shit. Gorgeous movie. Insane animation, you know? But there's a reason people don't really talk about it nowadays, you know.
As I remember, Vampire Hunter D and Fist of the North Star, both of those films were made by the same people.
Yeah, you can, and Fist of the North Star, you could tell that was not exactly a high budget movie either, you know.
So if there's one part in both of the movies where there's a crowd shot, and D is in Fist of the North Star, and then Kenshiro is in. You know what, Vampire Hunter D, like as a background character with like a shade over his
eyes. Wasn't it Toei that did both of those? I know Toei did Fist of the North Star. I know that.
Yeah, it was the same two studios, the same studios that did both. They were both making them simultaneously.
Yeah,
either the same director or the same, just the same bunches of people.
Yeah,
you know, on both sides.
All right, let's move on. Enough Otanime, you know. But we got time to kill. We only got two more questions. And Brett, get ready. The last two questions are Elden Ring related, sir. So get ready.
Elden Ring.
All right. Alpha Chuck. My man was going through it this week, boy. Carlos, you know what happened in the Discord, you know. So both of his questions are related to that. And the reason I'm not saying it now is because he talks about it in his question. They're both long, so bear with me. But thank you, Alpha Chuck, for editing your shit. Very well done. Thank you. I didn't have to go in there. Sometimes, I'm not going to name names, but sometimes motherfucker just has a single sentence thing, and I got to completely reword it so it makes sense. But this shit was good, you know? He goes, apologies for a length. All good, brother. What are your honest opinions on Shadow of the Erdtree's final boss? There is a lot of discussion online about the final boss and DLC ending being the weakest point of the expansion, and I have to agree. FromSoft built its reputation on making challenging but fair boss battles, which is a very hard balance to nail as consistently as they do. The final boss missed the mark and was hard for the sake of it, in my opinion. He goes, I aired my grievances in real time in Discord last week. Oh, yeah. Story-wise, the ending was incredibly lackluster and did not add anything new to the lore. I know Elden Ring does not make use of story-driven cutscenes or explanations, leaving a lot of inference and interpretation up to the player, and that is fine and a creative choice, but after beating the boss, you get a 10-second cutscene that gives you no new info, and then it just kind of ends. If I were a reviewer, I would have a hard time not taking points off for that, even if the other 95% of the game was good. Yeah, let's talk about the final boss, man. Shadow Erdtree, Radahn, again. Like, yo, didn't we beat you already, motherfucker? But he came back. He came back, no horse. It was just him. And that dude gave us the work, you know?
Oh, yeah.
That dude gave us the work.
The funny thing is, we we fought him. I fought him like 60 plus times on my own. Because I was ahead. So to give context to the folks, usually, you know, me, Tony, and Chris would fight most of the bosses together.
Yeah.
And that's how we trudged along the game. But then at some point, I got ahead of them both. So I'm like, so I got to the final area, and I'm like, oh shit, now I got to do this on my own if I want to keep playing. So I kept playing and did it on my own. Got fucked up so many damn times, man. By my own, on my own, with summons, with randos, and summoning randos took even longer than, you know, was probably the hardest part of the final boss. It's like trying to get them, because I think they either fixed it or, you know, the congestion is just out of that location. But, you know, trying to get people to join your game was pretty difficult. So I finally beat him after 60 plus tries, and then we joined into Tony and Chris's game, and I helped them out, and we beat him. It took a couple of times. You know, it wasn't easy. And Chris was even harder, and we noticed it was even harder.
I think for me, it took like a good, it was less than 10 tries, and with Chris, it took us an hour or more, man. You know, yeah, but that was because 15. He had like New Game Plus or something, so it was like really crazy. But I want to get Brett in here, and then, you know, I'll give some of my other thoughts. Brett, what do you think of the final boss, and did you think he was unfair?
I mean, I have mixed feelings. Full disclosure, I haven't beaten him yet. I backed off because I wanted to go play through the DLC again, looking for clues that I missed. I'm also playing with my girlfriend, so I was like, I'm going to try him. Like, the first time I fought him, I second phased him. And then the next few times I got pretty close. And then I was kind of like, you know, I'm gonna back off a little bit. I'm kind of afraid to beat the DLC. But, like, I've seen all of his phases. I've fought all of him. I've seen the ending. So I feel like it can kind of weigh in here. Just got to throw that asterisk in there. I mean, man, the final boss fight was challenging, but I think one of the things about these From Software games is, you know, it's everybody has a boss that they hate, and the final boss isn't really mine. Like, the orbital cannon feels timed to roles. And one of the things I noticed through the DLC is a lot of stuff feels like the window is very specifically timed so you could roll for next thing, roll for next thing, roll for next thing. So I had to take off Bloodhound Step about halfway through the DLC because, like, the dodge window on Bloodhound Step is asynchronous to the window that they give you for repeated dodges. And so, like, around the Mesmer fight, I'm like, bro, I keep getting fucked up because my Bloodhound Step is just half a second longer. Like, it's just slightly behind where my roll is. Sure, it gets me extra distance, but it's that timing throws me off. So I didn't think that Radahn was as hard as a couple of the other things that I had fought. But again, maybe it's, you know, way harder. Like, a lot of them do at the very end of their health bar because you get greedy and you're like, motherfucker. But bro, I had more problems with the fucking sunflower. We're talking that goddamn sunflower.
Oh, Brett. Brett. Oh, let me give this story real quick story. So I beat the final boss for Don, and I went to New Game Plus, right? I defeated all the, a lot of the main Elden Ring bosses in one try, and I went back into the DLC, and I defeated all the main bosses. You know, Mesmer. I defeated the Lion Dancer dude, Rinala, whichever one it is. The main boss, Radahn, all of them. I beat them all in one try. All of them. The fucking Sunflower King took me four tries. And I'm like, what the hell? You're not supposed to be anywhere near these motherfuckers. For some reason, he was the one. But yeah, I agree with you, Brett. It really depends on your play style, your character. Because Radahn, when in my first try with Radahn, I feel like if you're trying to solo him as a mage, it's really, really difficult. Because he doesn't give you time to cast anything, but if you play him as a mage with other people that are good at tanking, then that changes everything. I do want to give a shout out to Bale, man. Bale was pretty tough.
Bale,
curse you, Bale.
I gotta say though, like, when we're talking about difficulty, I will say, like, the Bale fight was tough. The barrel fight was also probably one of my favorite dragon fights in the entire Soul series.
Oh, yeah.
That was fucking epic, man. I agree with you on that one.
The same way, like, Lion Dancer was super tough the first time I ran across it, but holy shit, that was an epic fight.
Brett, did you know there's two? It's two dudes?
Yeah.
I was like, wait a minute. Danny showed me that. I'm like, it's two motherfuckers?
Yeah, it's a
Lion Dancer. Yeah, that's a Lion Dancer. Yeah.
I was like, it's two.
Lion Dancers are usually... There's usually two.
Yeah, but I'm like, how are they connected when he's jumping and all that shit, you know?
They have to be like the way lion dancing works is there. It's a dance, so it's synchronized.
No, I get it, but I'm saying how when they jump in the air in the game. That I'm asking, that's what I want to know. Go ahead, Brett.
There's actually assets that take off, like they drill down and like one of the reasons I love Soul Games, like they remove the top cloth and you can actually see the two guys and how they're linked together. And like when it jumps up in the air and like spins around and flies around, that's the one dude leaping into the air channeling and the other dude's grabbing his ankles and flying along the
island. I love it. Oh man. Yeah. But what I would say with the difficulty of the final boss, I felt that the lion and the girl after him, Renala, I think her name was.
Oh, Renala.
Those two, those took me days to beat. Right. And after that, and Brett, you know how Souls games are. Once you get over a certain hurdle, you're kind of okay-ish for the rest of it. So I was okay, hit the fucking Sunflower, was stuck there for a day or two. Thank you, Carlos, you know. And then I was okay, and then got to the final boss. Final boss was fucking annoying as shit, but the Lion Dancer was way harder for me. Way harder, you know? So it's kind of to your point, Brett, it depends on the player and the art and the play style, you know. I'm not dismissing him. Dude was hard as fuck, but that Lion Dancer, it took me a week, you know? Fucking insane.
And bro, like that's how all the Souls bosses are. Like Melania wouldn't like
we Oh that fucking bitch.
Right? We have this discussion like every time a Souls game comes out. And like it's true, they do keep raising the bar. Like it keeps being like, oh, I'm sorry. You waiting for me to lift my arm before you attack me? What if I faint now?
You know,
9 times. And like, it's just been over the years, it's been a game of one-upsmanship, which is why we've now found ourselves at a point where they're like, raise arm, faint, pause, faint, dash, 9-hit combo, break, faint, dash, 9-hit combo, fly through the air, shoot an orbital cannon from their asshole. Like, it's, that's how we've ended up at this place. It's just a game of like, oh yeah, well, what about this? So as far as the lore goes, like, I feel like I guess even before I should break out of that, like, and we're already having it, like, everyone's like, this lore is too hard, and like, 4 days later, someone's like, you know, like, watch me no-hit run this while naked in a butt cheek, or controller clenched in my butt cheeks. Like, it's people will be beating this on a Guitar Hero controller in, like, a week or two. These all feel insanely, oppressively... And you're just ridiculously overpowering and impossible. And that's kind of the whole point of the game. Is when you first approach it, you're like, nobody can do this. And like a week later, you're doing it blindfolded. Like it's supposed to come off that way. And that's kind of the beauty of the genre. That's kind of the beauty of a lot of the metaphor that people find in these things. Is like, you know, it's like a Dark Souls game. Things, you know, feel intimidating and impossible at first. But if you keep at it, and you know, learn and study and be studious, you can find a way to conquer just about anything. Like,
No, you're 100% right. Think about this. You know, the dude let me solo her. He died, I think it was like 500 times. But now look at him now. My man's just skilling it. No, that doesn't get it once, you know?
Yo, Tony.
Yo, what up?
Can you put my video on or click on my window?
You got to share it.
Oh, no. Just click on my...
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Where's this million questions?
It's big now. Yeah. It's in big.
So check this out, guys. This is the... don't look if you don't want to see the final boss.
Yeah, oh, shit. This is looking clean as fuck. The frame went... Oh, damn! Yo!
And that's it?
Yo, run that again. So in case you missed it, this is the first time you met him, right?
Yeah, that was one of the first times. Yeah.
Okay. So look at this. So for you guys listening... Carlos steps through the portal, right? He pulls out his mimic tear. Boss comes in, kills him in one hit.
Yo,
comes in like fucking M. Bison and shit. Go ahead, Carlos, Brett.
and y'all get clocked so hard and so fast that your souls, your bloodstain are on the outside of the boss door.
Yes.
Brett, one of the funniest things was, like, you know, when these guys were helping me out, I would step through the portal, he'd come through, and they're still on the other side of the portal, they would get hit. It's fucking insane, you know? I'm sorry, here's the thing, I know it's difficult and hard, but that's part of the fun, you know? Because very few games challenge you like that nowadays, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, like, to me, the DLC was fucking amazing. I loved it, you know? What a blast that was.
That's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah. And Brad, I don't blame you. It's like, let me savor this like fine wine. You don't want that shit to end. You know?
I'm going to come back. Well, like, I want to understand, like, y'all know me, like, I'm a lore hound, right? Like, I'm, yeah. I savor this shit before everybody, like, you know, because, like, once the mystery is solved, the mystery is solved. So I'm like, oh, man, like, I'm enjoying this. And I'm digging through, and I'm like, I got to the final boss, and I kind of had this moment of, like, what the fuck is going on? Like, I looked around, I was like, I have no idea what any of this means. I just showed up to, I guess, murder a child? Like, why am I doing this? I'm gonna take a step back. And so I've been digging through with my other one, and, like, I feel like there are so many implications and so many small things that come with this final boss that I think it doesn't tell you a lot while it tells you so much. Like, it's, oh my God, there is so much going on here. Even down to, like, you know, you beat the boss and, like, you see a one-sided cutscene, sure. But the fact that it's a one-sided cutscene is kind of indicative of, like, you know, how consensual that whole deal was. Hmm.
Yeah, there's some creepy stuff going in there. Uncomfortably creepy, if you know what I mean. And like we talked about this last time, Brett. It's like you could tell where George R. R. Martin had some of his, you know, incest stuff going on. It's like, oh, bro.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was, and I, you know, it's, I don't know. But see, that's the thing. It's like, I'm not sure how incesty it is when you break into, like, their gene pool. Because, like, it really shines a lot of stuff on, like, okay, so we know, spoiler here, America is Radagon, but, like, we don't really know how or why.
Yeah. How or why.
In the DLC, I think we kind of got that answer as an answer to a lot of stuff. Like it's become very clear that ascent to godhood is not just a single person endeavor, right? Like, it requires a consort and to bind with them, to become their vessel of sorts. So, like, it kind of follows, like, the traditional alchemical idea of the homunculus, you know, a perfect being of made of multiple beings. You know, it's, you can only channel divinity, you know, it, like, one being has to reach spiritual divinity, and another one has to be, like, the physical vessel to bind to. And so you're like, okay, well, to me, like, the whole America Radagon thing, it speaks a lot. And then you find out all the weird fucking jar stuff about the shaman and their ability to harmoniously blend with other entities. And you kind of have this recipe for a type of people who are more primed to be able to access this kind of divine gate that exists than anybody else, which then explains the horn scent, explains the genocide, explains why America's so pissed and caused burned everything down. I personally have ideas into, like, who or what America is, and, like, the light that kind of shines on the origins of the Golden Order and what this means for why all of her children are cursed with beings outside of the two fingers, they're all cursed by outer gods and things like that. So, but that's not the question you asked.
Nope.
If we're still talking about this, Brett, can I ask you a question since you're more familiar with the lore?
Yeah.
So could you explain Godfrey and how, so this is a part that I don't understand. Godfrey is the first Elden Lord. He was married to Marika, and had, you know, their kids. And then he somehow left, but then he somehow came back, but then he's somehow responsible for the Tarnished, but somehow is responsible for trying to defeat you as a Tarnished. I don't get that part.
Okay. It wasn't until I was playing it again recently that I was like, you know, when you fight the golden one, I'm like, you know what? I wonder if that's actually Godfrey's grace. Godfrey was America's first husband. They had several kids together. And then after he had finished fighting her war, it was said that the grace left his eyes. Like the golden immortality that was bestowed onto all of America's people by way of America through the Erdtree, you know, that golden immortality that, you know, was the end of the age of death and all that stuff. Like, so she had bestowed everybody immortality and grace, and that manifested as glowing gold eyes. And so the second he finished fighting her war, his immortality, his grace faded. And all of his power and all of his immortality was taken away, along with his entire army. And they were kind of then just exiled for no reason from the lands in between. And we, as the Tarnished, are his army. So him and all of us were exiled, you know, from outside lands between, and we died. And I guess his golden grace ghost just stayed there and defended things because it was torn from his body or whatever. And that part's kind of ambiguous. Regardless, years later, our grace was kind of returned to us, which is why we wake up and why we're now kind of immortal. And so what happened to us also happened to Godfrey. And so just like us, he's returned to the lands between to try and claim the Elden Ring and become Elden Lord. And honestly, he has more claim to it than we do. But, you know, we both kind of awkwardly get there at the same time. And we're like, uh-oh. And then we fight to the death because that's what you do.
Interesting. The story in the game is really good. If, like, you know, just on itself. But, you know, the only thing that's unfortunate, or fortunate, depending on how you look at it, is you only get that through lore of the video game. You know, getting other people, other characters' stories, you know, and reading into different items and weapons and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's a big, weird, obscure mystery. And, like, I think it's a double-edged sword because it makes it more difficult for, like, people like Tony. Like, I don't think, for the most part, Tony has any idea of the nuances of what's going on in Souls game.
Well, I have absolutely no idea, but I don't care because I love the gameplay and the worlds and the character, you know, and the, you know, the combat so much. I remember, I'm the lore guy. I'm the fucking narrative guy. The gameplay, the level design, the art is so good. Legit don't give a fuck. Legit don't give a fuck. And I'm okay with that, you know?
Yeah. You're just like Hulk from Avengers. You're like, oh, big monster.
Yeah. Because like under normal circumstances, it would bother me that I don't understand the story. But I'm not in it for the story. I don't care about that. I just want to fight shit, you know? And I want to, you know, do jolly cooperation. That's what I'm in it for, you know?
And something about that makes me want to understand everything more. When they're like, you know, this staff was owned by Harbor Bibberfoot, the final son of the Bibberfoot family, who acres years ago, 70. I'm like, oh my god, I don't fucking care. I do not care. Just tell me what I need to know so I can move on. So like a lot of that flavor and backstory of most games, I don't love. So it is the cryptic, hard to understand nature of this shit that makes me want to kind of figure it out. So it's a double-edged sword in that it would make it easier for some people to understand if it were more on the surface, but it would also kind of take some of the fun out for some of the people like me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But since the question did address like the story of the DLC, did you find it disappointing for those who understood it, which is Brett?
I think a lot of people were expecting the big reveal to be the final boss. And in a way, it kind of is, but it's the implications of the final boss and what they mean for all the shit that happened way before we got there. You know, we're not like going to be like final Mikula. Like, I kind of felt like the end boss was like, yeah, no shit, it was going to be Mikula. We all knew Mikula was in the DLC, and if you actually thought kindly Mikula was not going to be the big bad guy, I don't know what you were smoking, man. Like that was obviously going to be a thing. The fact that he, you know, did weird fucking necromancy and nobody batted an eye, like, okay, I guess that's just the world we're living in. That's, yeah, okay, sure. And the fact that it was incesty, I'm like, ah, yeah, that's, I don't know, like, That's Radagon's kid and Merica's kid. So like it's at least like step incesty, which I guess like is just, I mean, that's gross. I don't even want to get into that. But yeah, George R. R. Martin, what the fuck, man? Just stop it, all right? Beyond that, though, all of a sudden, like, you know, seeing him at the gate of divinity using a consort to achieve divinity, I had this moment of like, oh God. And then, like, I looked around at the arena, and, like, I saw what it was made out of, and I was like, oh God, oh no. And then I kind of went back and watched the story trailer, which you kind of always need to fill in the pieces. And like, I saw America ascending the steps covered in gore of people. Like, she's the lone person walking up these steps, like, covered in gore after pulling literal strands of golden grace out of the corpses of things and using them at the gate to, like, achieve divinity. I was like, oh, there is so much here that I am digesting. And like, I'm kind of torn because like, I don't just want to throw it out in the room. I think maybe people would like to find it on their own, or maybe the game's been out for a while there and I could just throw around my theories. Like, I don't know, thoughts.
Throw it out, man. Go ahead.
Do it.
Yeah.
I am 90% convinced that Merica is a jar saint.
Okay. You like, explain that.
Like, okay. Like she was like beaten to a pulp into one of those jars and stuff.
No, she is the product of a finished jar.
Okay, explain that.
The jars are a bunch of people that are chopped up and include a shaman so that their flesh blends harmoniously together in an attempt to create a saint. They don't think a saint is just a finished jar. And if you see the half finished jars that burst open, you can see the faces and the things kind of forming in them.
Yeah.
That it's a humanoid figure that looks like Merica. And you might be like, oh, okay, well, maybe that was just, you know, the person put in the jar. But, like, they don't put any people in the jar. They put people parts in the jar. So that's not a half-dissolved person. That's a half-formed person. And they all look like Merica. And I'm kind of convinced that the Newman are finished jar saints. That they were kind of, because they keep talking about nigh sainthood awaits. So they're trying to create saints while building a literal tower to heaven to commune with divinity. Like, the saints were their way of communion with divinity. But Merica, I think, rebelled and just straight up murdered everybody and stole her godhood. That's why her lineage is cursed. She's like not, she's an artificial being, just like the Newman.
Hmm. Interesting. So
yeah, that's the part that I'm not too sure of, because I always thought, and this is just probably headcanon, I always thought that Merica escaped before those whole ritual of shamans being turned into jar soups or whatever the hell they are.
So, but like, that would make her the sole survivor, which feels weirdly opportunistic.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought the same thing at first. I was like, yeah, she's the only one that got away. But like, why or how?
Well, I guess the whole thing, and this is where convenience comes in. It's like the higher order is the one that chose her. So it's like that. I guess that's one way they could technically be like explained. It's like, oh, well, the higher order ordered for America to be the one to be, you know, be the lone survivor and do all
the this. Higher then, order being the greater will.
Yeah, the greater will.
But it's established canonically in the DLC that the greater will has abandoned the world since long before America took the throne.
I thought here's where it gets complicated, because the story isn't actually explained anywhere, like in a sense where a traditional video game is. But my thought, it was like the Ur Tree was, you know, the will lift through the Ur Tree and the fingers and all that, and that's what, you know, served the greater will.
Yeah, but Beater, the mother of fingers, has been abandoned by the greater will. America is like the champion of meter, not necessarily the greater will.
Interesting. Okay.
I think that's the big twist of this DLC is like, yes, you're led to believe that the fingers create, you know, commune with the greater will. America's divinity is gifted to her by, you know, this greater will that is overseeing things. But in the DLC, you come to find out that like, her divinity was stolen, not given. The thing that she is communicating with and that birthed the fingers by her will is broken and abandoned, and that it was never kind of ordained godhood written in the stars. It was always kind of a sham and a golden order built on lies.
Hmm. Yo, man, I can't wait for the anime.
Right?
All right, that was awesome, man. All right, last question. Also, Shadow of the Erdtree Tree related. On the top,
Elden Ring.
Or actually, I guess it's more From Software in general. Anyway, on the topic of From Software game boss difficulty, where can they go from here with their next game? They certainly have reached the peak with a Millennia and the DLC end boss. I can't see them upping the difficulty any further while maintaining the same quality and making the fights feel cheap. I'm kind of missing the days of Dark Souls, where the runbacks to the boss rooms are an equal challenge to the boss, instead of 90% of the enemies feeling like fodder you can one shot and the boss being godlike.
Was it ever really like that?
I kind of understand where he's coming from. Like, I did feel all the enemies up to the bosses were kind of, there are exceptions, obviously, for the most part, they were kind of foddery, and the bosses were harder. But
I mean, maybe you could always run past them. Like,
yeah,
Souls games always, I mean, that's why I never, like, I see a lot of people being like, oh, can we add boss runs, please? And I'm like, bro, the game is pretty much entire, like,
the whole game's a boss run.
Boss runs is damn near optional.
Yeah. No, you're right about that. So that is true, you know? But yeah, where do you think they could go? I guess the heart of the question is, where do you think they could go in terms of like boss difficulty, you know, since he believes that the bosses in this DLC are like the hardest ever? Like, how could they make them any harder? I guess I think that's what he's trying to ask.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see this question again in 6 months to see after time has gone on and there's, you know, guides and wikis and everybody knows the weakness and the attack pattern and everything like that, if it's going to be regarded as the most difficult thing they've ever done. It very well might, because the difficulty does seem to be ramping up and their DLCs are always the hardest. But, like, I wonder if it'll have the same severity. In answer to your question, like, I would... It's a very good question. I don't know that they need to go up from here. I think it's just more expansive. I don't know. The bosses need to get bigger and necessarily more difficult. They can increase some of the complexity, but I think at this point it's a lot more world building. Miyazaki said, and I can't believe the balls on this man when he said this, I'm going to paraphrase, but he said his whole career he's been trying to get create the perfect dark fantasy RPG. Elden Ring isn't it, but it's getting close. And I was like,
I remember him saying that. Yeah,
what do you mean it's getting close? Jesus Christ, this man is never like wins like 7 Game of the Year awards, gets progressively better critiques than higher selling games, and changes the industry several times. Man, is it still satisfied?
Yeah. So it's the mark of a true artist. You're never satisfied. You always want, you know, you could do better. You know, I respect that. I respect that. And it also makes me hype for what the next game's going to be. If he's like, okay, that wasn't it yet, let's try to do it again. Oh, man.
Here's right? the thing. The thing with these games is it's not make it more difficult for difficulty's sake, is make it a more difficult in a different aspect that makes these bosses difficult. Like Millennia is not the same as Verdon is, but they're both equally difficult, like, because for different reasons.
Yeah.
You know, if you fight like the Sunflower dude, he's not one of the main bosses. He's a boss, but not one of the main ones. But for some reason, he has his own ways that makes him more difficult to other people than other bosses are. So, you know, I just feel like they have to, the way that they do it is just do different types of, you know, bosses that do different types of things that create challenges. Don't necessarily have to make slide all the, you know, the meters all the way up to the, you know, like, oh, make the damage all the way up and make your damage taken all the way down, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that's the way to approach it. I feel like making them unique, making their skill sets different, the spells different, making the patterns different, that's the way to approach it.
Yeah, I agree.
But by the way, I have two questions. If after we're done with this topic?
Yeah, I mean, you could ask it now. I think we all answer that question. Go ahead.
So two quick questions. One's for Tony, one's for Brett.
Uh-oh.
And Tony, I'll leave it up to you. Who should I ask the question to first?
I'll go first.
All right. So this is a rehash of a question that I had earlier.
Yeah.
This year, but I'm going to change it.
Uh-oh.
Let's say I give you the option. It's hypothetical. I know how much you love those types of questions.
My favorite types. Yeah.
Your favorite type of question. Let's say I say, yo, Tony, I'll give you the option. 2025. Would you rather have Elden Ring 2? And my guarantee is it'll be as good or if not better than Elden Ring. Or would you take Winds of Winter, not knowing if it's going to be good or not?
Winds of Winter. It's not even an option. Like, yeah. Winds of Winter. Been waiting years for that. See, with Elden Ring, I just got a little taste right now. I'm good. I'm satisfied for another couple of years. But Winds of Winter, how long have we been waiting for that fucking book? Like 11, 12 years or something?
It's 13? It's 2011. Remember? It's been so long.
Yeah.
It's a lot of confidence that it's going to be good.
I want the fucking book. Give me the fucking book, please. So that's my answer.
All right. Good answer. Yeah. Now, my question to Brett, I don't think you were, I'm pretty sure you weren't here when we were discussing this. I think it was last week, and we were talking about, you know, how to make Elden Ring better, and I wondered if what you thought about this, but, like, I always thought that it would be good, let's say, you know, when you go to the Midra house, you know, the Midra house, or when you get to the place where all the dragons are at, I always thought, you know, a good way to make the game better is, like, let's say when you get to the Midra house, you get a cutscene. And the cutscene doesn't have to be like, here's what the story of this house is. It doesn't have to be that. It can just be a cutscene where it shows, you know, something happened to the house or someone died in the house or just some, like, a lore type of cutscene. But I always thought, you know, I always felt like a way to make the game even better is to do that for, like, all the places you visit. Like, let's say you go to the fissure place where the Cerulean Coast is, where you go down. Like, it'll be cool, like, if you go there either before the boss or before you get to the fissure, it's like there's a cutscene that shows something that happened here or something, I don't know, something that gives importance to the place you're giving it and sort of puts it to life. I don't know, I always thought about that, and I'm curious to know what your thoughts are.
I think I'm all right. Like, I love the reveal that they do. Like, when you first walk into Shadow of the Erdtree and, like, you come up through the cave, you know, like, I think that's probably a pretty good example. You touch the cocoon and you're kind of expecting this, I don't know, cutscene or something like that. And all of a sudden you're just dropped into this quiet, desolate little grove that doesn't have any sound or music. It's just dead quiet. And come up through the cave and you step out. And you're greeted with kind of the vista of the gravesite plains. Like, I love that. And one of the things I've always loved about the Souls series is that they feel kind of like you're showing up long after the things have happened. Like, that, I'm trying to think of how to explain it, but like they're, you showing up isn't an event, right? It's more like you're stumbling up onto a crime scene. And I don't want the video to really show me what happened and why this area is important as much as, like, I get it from kind of digging through the evidence and, you know, suddenly being like, oh, I know what happened here. Oh, God. And, you know, you look around and you start to recognize, you know, bits of the environment or things like that. So I personally like how the story is told. I don't oftentimes love it when I do get the cutscenes, like when you walk into Renala's chamber or when you drain the sunken temple district, that kind of thing. I always kind of feel like, I get it, I'm walking around, but, like, part of the thing that I've learned to love about this game is this kind of quiet desolation. And I feel like not having those cutscenes really highlights that sort of emptiness, which in a way adds to the environmental storytelling. The same way I feel like Fallout, it would kind of ruin the environmental storytelling if, you know, I entered a house and I, you know, saw a cutscene pan over that showed, like, you know, some skulls sitting on a banister and then, like, you know, a table with skeletons still set at and dinner still set. Like, I'd rather stumble on that myself than have it kind of panned across and highlighted for me in a cutscene. I also feel like cutscenes are overrated.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay, that's a good answer.
Yeah, that was good. All right, man. That's gonna do it for us, man. Good stuff. We filled out a whole show. You know, despite some of the questions, and the chat was kind of quiet tonight, which is interesting. But maybe they were engrossed in the conversation, you know, which is good. All right, start wrapping stuff up here. Man, do you have anything to plug?
I guess I'll keep doing this until the end of the month.
Yeah.
But I think this coming week, what is this? What is today? The 22nd?
Yeah.
So this coming week, I think on the 24th, I want to say, or maybe it's next month. I don't know. I'll do surf. But anyway, 40th anniversary of Ninja Turtles. The 40th anniversary Ninja Turtle special by IDW with artwork by myself, Kari Randolph, and they got us all together to do some TMNT 2003 story for it. So yeah, that's out right now at your local comic book store, or you can get it on any of the digital comic platforms. Number two is, yes, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number one, which is the relaunch of the IDW Ninja Turtles, which is going to be coming out real soon. And yeah, that's about it.
Nice. By the way, speaking about that, again, I'm just scrolling through Twitter here, and somebody did like fan art. It has Battletoads, Biker Mice from Mars, Ninja Turtles, what are the name of the cats, Manny? With
SWAT cats.
SWAT cats. Yeah. And then somebody mm-hmm. goes like, yo, man, should have thrown Street Sharks in there too.
you should also throw the Toxic Avengers in there too.
Yeah, right.
That's also that sort of same sort of idea, you know, like this team of four that's, you know, the smart one, the leader, the usual deal.
Yeah,
the
that's goofball. Fun. Yeah, pretty much. All right, man. And obviously go check out the Coalition. There's always good stuff there. Coalition.com with a K, and Coalition on YouTube. You know, where they have all the entertainment and gaming stuff, lots of entertainment stuff. I'm reviewing something, probably Power, not to be confused with. I don't know why Rich keeps bringing that joke. I don't think people remember that show Powers, you know, Michael Bendis's Powers. I don't think people remember that was a show that was like 10 years ago.
There's Powers, and then there's Power.
Yeah, because he's reviewing Power. So Powers, yes. I legit don't think people even know that reference anymore, you know.
Powers was a free giveaway on PlayStation Network on a PlayStation 3. You got like the first two episodes of Powers,
yeah.
And I think it had the guy who played Rorschach in it too.
Oh, I'm not sure.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But
it was not a good adaptation. It was not a good adaptation.
No, not at all.
Powers was a really good comic. Anyway, make sure you follow Throwdown on Twitch and Twitter. Join a Discord where the conversations and the rumors are always popping. You could also follow us on your favorite podcast app, Throwdown Show, two words, Throwdown Show, throwdownshow.com to listen to past episodes. And of course, if you have been watching us on YouTube and like the video, make sure you hit like, subscribe, and hit the bell to be notified of when we go live. Links to everything down below. Once again, I was your host, Tony Polanco, and tonight I'm joined by Emilio Lopez.
See you next time.
Carlos Romero.
Peace out.
And Brett Murdoch.
Deuces.
All right, people, you already know. Thursday, later.
See ya.
Epic Elden Talk.